is Aisha Khan. I work at macadamian.com. We're a design development firm out of Ottawa or Gatineau, depends on which one you want to go with because it's just across the same river. And today I will be talking about design anti-patterns for Windows 8 applications, and I hope that Thomas won't hate me by the end of this exercise. Because the big decision at the end of what is the biggest anti-pattern is interesting. I think you'll agree with me, but we'll see how he feels after. Okay, so I would like to encourage everybody to follow us on Twitter/post stuff on Facebook. And I'm reminding everyone that is not an L, it is an I for pure imagination. This is design session number 5, therefore the hashtag is DES5 and Windows 8 pure imagination, Win8PI. So first, just a quick thing of what would you consider an anti-pattern? An anti-pattern, defined by other amazing people, not myself, very intelligent people in their books like The Group of Four, are common patterns or solutions that exist out there, but when you use them in specific cases, they're actually ineffective or actually counterproductive even. But for it to really be considered an anti-pattern, and I took this definition to heart, is that there has to be an alternative solution. Otherwise, you're just stuck. And the question becomes, does the alternative solution exist to the anti-patterns that I will discuss today? Mostly it'll be one, but maybe two. And can we identify it? And how do we go about actually coming to that solution that'll work? So for this talk, I decided that instead of giving examples that weren't real. At Macadamian, and people were very, very nice to agree to letting us talk about these apps. So one of them is the Microsoft Expense Report, and the second one is Mixologist. And you'll get to be introduced to both apps soon. So first, I just wanted to quickly cover what the navigation patterns that are suggested by the guideline are. One of the typical ones that you see a lot is the idea of hub view, section view, and then the detail view. And this is the most common one that you will see most Windows 8 store apps use. The other one is a flat view, which is a little bit less often used, but you'll see it in browser, you'll see it in games, and that one is that app bar at the top that lets you switch pages. The main difference between the two is the kind of content. One of them has a lot more content that actually can be split into separate sections. So there's categories that the content belongs to, and then you can drill down to the detail. In the flat view, what you actually have is the ability to switch between content that's split into pages that you would consider at the same level or completely different. So that's just that. This is the template grid that everybody sees, everybody starts out with. This is, as a developer, when you first get introduced to Windows 8, you start with either the Contoso app or the food truck, and they're very much along the idea of hub, section, and detail. And the app that I demoed earlier, Tox, does the same thing. This is the most common pattern that happens. So the Expense Report app. The Expense Report app is an enterprise app, and we wanted, and this is very, very early on when Windows 8 just came out, and you didn't really have a lot of examples of apps that did enterprise. You didn't have examples of apps that did data entry. And so the purpose of this app was essentially that a Microsoft employee would be able to go to this app, create and submit expense reports. They would have charges that would show up that they had incurred on a credit card. They could create charges for the ones that they had gotten out of pocket, and then they would be able to put them together into an expense report, submit that to a manager. A manager would go and either approve or reject those apps because, yes, I'm not paying for your $100 bottle of wine, as an example. So that was the, you know, basic enterprise app goal. There's going to be some data entry. There's going to have to be reports created and then submitted. I'm only going to cover two-ish cases from the whole of this app, so you won't actually see the manager side, but the idea is to show you the thought process behind the design and why certain decisions were made, and where we realize is what an anti-pattern that we kept coming across in doing a Windows 8 app. So when we took a first stab at this application, we realized that, okay, so an employee is going to have, I'm wondering if you guys can actually read it first. Somewhat. But this is a design doc that just shows you that same idea, that there would be a hub, there would be a section, and then there would be some details. And if you notice, the hub does that whole tile business again. So each section's tiles would show up at the hub level. And if you went deeper into the section, you would just have the tiles for that, probably ordered by something that makes sense, like date. It's charges, so date would make sense, or an event. Saved reports, then submitted reports, something about news and FAQ, which I don't know. Do you get news and FAQ in your expense report app? I don't think so. Yeah. But this is the first stab, right? First stab at what would make sense for this expense report app. Then we started questioning this, actually. Does it make sense, really? How often does anyone, you know, the first section here on the hub is your pending charges. Do you really go into an app trying to browse through the 50, 100, 200 charges that you've had because you went to three different events in the last 2-3 months that you then have to select and put together into a report and submit to your manager? Does it make sense that I would be scrolling over and scrolling over and scrolling over because I have 100 charges? And then I make it to, oh, what is the status of my saved reports? Has my boss actually approved those reports? So we realized that this might actually not be the best way to move forward. And instead, we came up with this idea that actually our hub should be a dashboard. Our hub should be something that gives us an overview, a very quick overview, because the purpose of this app is that, do I have charges that are outstanding? Do I need to create an expense report? Yes, I do. Let's go create the expense report and submit it. This, at the hub level, means I can get into my app, quickly take a look, and know that. Because it tells me, I do have outstanding charges. Okay, that means I should go and put them in some kind of expense report. I can see that I actually have a saved report. Oh, that means I haven't submitted it. Why haven't I submitted it? Am I waiting on something? So very, very quickly at the hub level, I'm actually getting the information I need out of this app. So having 50 tiles here giving me every single charge that I'd posted wouldn't have given me that. It would just have said, you have all these charges. Do you really need to go through all of them? So this is what we actually ended up building. It was built by Robert Greene, not by Macadamian. This was a joint effort with Robert Greene and Nadine Fox from Macadamian. So she did the design, he did the implementation. The first version of the app was this green, and this is where you see the idea of having a dashboard. And you can see that it says, you know, two new, two old, one late. Why is late important? Again, it's giving you this quick information that something is late. It's important because actually your credit card is going to start charging you interest because you have not reconciled that charge yet. So it makes it very, very obvious to the user you do need to do something. But if I had said nothing, I very quickly also know I don't need to do anything. Exit this app. I'm done. So this is a little bit different than the assumed idea that your hub has to have these square tiles. Your hub has to start with all the square tiles that belong in one subcategory or category that you're going to have. And then when you go through a section, it's going to break down by something that makes logical sense within that section. So charges would be by date. That I don't need that. This is what I need as a user. This is the information I need at my hub. So then this is the blue version is actually what we ended up submitting, I believe. And in it, you see there's a charges section. And it has the section for the old, the late, but it actually now starts to also show you dollar signs. Because that's, again, information that matters to me. Do I owe money to a credit card? Does the company owe me money? Saved reports, so if I did need to actually submit one. Pending reports that need to be finished. Past reports, if I actually wanted the historical data, it is there. So notice how news and FAQ totally fell off the planet? Because we don't need it. This was the, so actually, here, the point for the anti-pattern part is that why should we go with the assumption that everything fits on a hub? And if it fits on a hub, does that hub actually have to be those square tiles? It's just a guideline. It's a starting point. It shouldn't be your end point. Ask the questions. What does the user need? What's your user case scenario? What makes sense to the user? And this is what made sense to the user. Just give me the info I need. I can exit. Oh, okay, I actually do need to do an action. I'll go do an action. This was the second thing that we did, and the reason why I want to cover this one is because it's a little bit weird. You don't see this much, this dual screen business. And actually editing in both panels. This was very, very early on, and this is the case where you're trying to actually take these charges that you have, throw them onto a report. Once they belong to a report, you can edit them. And what you can edit about them is, you know, what the location, well, the merchant would be something that you wouldn't change because, you know, that's where you actually were charged by, but your description perhaps, right? That I have this charge because I had dinner. Or this was a subway train ticket, or this was my hotel bill. But can you see the challenges in this way of splitting this workflow for a user? I mean, at the time, this seemed like a great idea. And because of the lack of enterprise app guidelines, or even ideas of what else we could have done and how early on in Windows 8 this was pretty innovative. This was a great way in one space to actually be able to do all of this. But there's challenges with this. What context is the app bar in? Is it this view or that view? When I press the little X, what happens? Where's the back button? Do I go back to my previous screen? Or does this actually close? Is it a modal that'll go away? And am I actually focused on the left or the right? Does focus count? In this case, actually, there's times when actually the focus is on both, especially when you select something, you add it here, and then you decide you want to edit it. And so now your focus is actually on both screens because you're editing a report and you're editing an item in that report as well. At the top there is just your general section view. So from the hub, if you had tapped on the title for charges, you would have gotten a section view here by time or date, I should say. But if you had actually tapped on the tile, you would be here trying to reconcile your charges that are outstanding and seeing if they need to belong on a report. So what ended up actually happening that worked, while that solution was innovative, it did work, it was confusing. It wasn't necessarily following the guidelines or finding the natural path forward. And it was a great effort that worked, but needed work for sure. It wasn't perfect. What ended up happening is that we did a bunch of design reviews and actually found that if we just take the idea of the app bar and the idea of selection and the app bar working with selection just a step further, then this workflow works. You don't have to stick it into this section and then detail page. You don't have to stick it into hub section detail page. It works on its own as a workflow, because when you actually go into the charges section, you select them. Oh, I could create a report here. These two belong on a report. And the report can be its own control, its own page. It's clean. You know what you're editing. You know what you're adding. Once you've saved that report, you're here. You can still see the charges. You can still edit the details of the report. And then, if I still needed to add a charge, use the app bar again, right? Because this report could have more charges added to it. What happens if I need to edit a charge now? Do I really need to pop up a panel? No, actually. If I tapped on this, I would get a screen that's just for editing that charge. It's clean, it's simple. The app bar's context belongs to that one context rather than two. What you can't see to the right there, sorry, it's cut out, is that how would you submit a report or not submit it but still save it? So really what you have is an app bar button with a little bit of a flyout that gives you two options every time you say save. It says, do you actually want to submit it at the same time, or do you just want to save it and you'll be editing it later? So just because you guys can't see it, I thought I'd cover it. Okay, before I move on from this slide, actually, that's a very simple case scenario with me only discussing two cases. The first one was questioning the hub. If I had actually stuck to the pattern, which is, yeah, stick it all in a grid and go, it doesn't work for us. And so the anti-pattern there really is that following the pattern is an anti-pattern. Sometimes it doesn't work. You have to take it back to first principles. Is it fast and fluid? Now it is, because the user in one glance knows what they need to do or they can exit, right? Content over Chrome. It's just the content they need. In the other hub with tiles, that's actually kind of just Chrome, because it's extra stuff, extra content, not the content I want to see. The second example where we split this out, we were inspired by the calendar app. So if you guys have the calendar app, you can see when you add a new event, you have the ability to edit it on the left and right. There's two panels. That was our inspiration for the two panels, and it seemed to work, but actually it didn't. It didn't work well. It confused the user. The context wasn't clear. And what we found was, again, sure, the pattern of the hub and section and view didn't solve it for us. But sticking to how things actually work naturally gave us a solution. Right? Just selecting two items. Oh, yeah, that's right. There's an app bar. We could totally add the control of creating a report here. It made a natural, familiar option available for the user. The next app that I wanted to talk about is, so it's one thing when you're kind of starting from scratch. In that case, we were, but we weren't. There was a web app that people used to submit their claims, but I wasn't familiar with it. The designer wasn't familiar with it. They were just told what you would be doing. So you started somewhat from a clean slate, and the starting point ended up being the grid template. In this case, it's actually a porting exercise, right? This is iOS. And Mixologist is an app that works on iPad, iPod, and iPhone. It uses the 1x, 2x option for it to work on both a tablet and a phone. But it's a fairly complicated app. It is the ultimate app, in their own words and mine too, it is the ultimate app for finding a recipe, for bartending, for recording your cabinet and having drinks that are based on that. So it was a fairly high challenge to translate this experience to Windows 8. And then you've already started thinking of this app in the framework that comes from another platform, right? In my mind, I'm still thinking in these terms: search all drinks, search by category, search by ingredient, favorite drinks. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, let's grab the hub, let's put on a title for each of these and put on some tiles. That should work, right? Because I'm still thinking in the terms that these are sections and that the list that these would give me would translate into the content of my hub tiles. But that may not be true. And I'm just going to go through some of the screenshots of this app so you can see the complexity of it, because it does have multiple variables that go across each other in the way you can actually even select a drink. So for people who can't see the right-hand side, I'm sorry, I should have just centered it. This is just if you tapped on drink categories, which is search by category, the first thing you would see are these top-level sections. It's classic, cocktails, hot drinks, jello shots, martinis, non-alcoholic, and popular. The other thing I'd like to point out is that you also have this bar, tab bar, where you've got the home, which is this. There's the cabinet, there's an ability to, this looks like a slot machine where you randomly get a drink, bartending, and then there's even more options. So functionally, this app is extremely rich. This is what it looks like if you go to the buy ingredients. So let me just search by ingredient on the top right-hand side corner. I'm only gonna cover two of the cases for the design. Of how we did those cases, but so first I'll introduce you to them. when you tap on searching by ingredients, you get this list, alphabetical, typical iOS style design. There's the arrows. You can also search. There's segment controls at the top, but notice that there's two levels of segment controls, right? You can search by all ingredients that could possibly go in a drink. You can search by liquor. Liquor could be, you know, rum, vodka, mixer, which could be a pop, garnish, which could be coriander. Well, actually, they call it cilantro in this app because I tried entering a custom drink yesterday. and then per one of those, you actually have the ability to say, under all ingredients, I want to have have all of them listed. Under liquor, I could have all of them listed, or I could have specific brands listed. And this matters because notice how this is vodka. Every absolute vodka is listed here because this is the all option. Vodka itself could just be one ingredient, but this app has the ability for you to go into the subtype, which is I want absolute 100 vodka, nothing else. And there are drink recipes that are specifically mentioning a specific kind of vodka brand, just so you know. And there's about 8,000 recipes on this app. Okay, so I selected, and I wanted to give you an example of how I would use this app and build this list of ingredients to get a list that keeps giving me compatible drinks. So the first thing is very specific. That is a rum that is a brand. It's Bacardi 151 proof rum. The next one is just amaretto, any brand, I don't care. The next one is pineapple juice. And then it makes the suggestion that for those ingredients, here are all the drinks that you could mix that they have in their library. And then finally, you make a selection. So I selected the Long Island Iced Berry, and it's a page that gives you all the ingredients, their measurements. These guys actually also give you the ability to set which measurements you're going to use, so whether imperial or not. So they also have that. Just so you know, they also have that. And then at the bottom there, you can, for each of the drinks, you have the instructions of how to make them, but you can also comment favorite, and one more action. Save to your own favorites, I guess. This is the second case scenario that I'm going to discuss today. If you decided to go to the cabinet tab. This is what shows up. This is a functionality where you could specify what your cabinet looks like so that you would have a drink list catered to your cabinet. And again, here, I want to show the fact that it's type and subtype. So cognac is a type, cider is a type, Everclear is a type. Gin is a type, but it has all the types of gins listed under it. And I selected only three, and the half-filled checkmark tells you that I said that gin, I actually have so many different types, I care. So please give me drinks specific to the types of gin I have. And then in the second screen, you see liquor cabinet matches. That's the list. And then if you selected one, you'd see the same detail screen. Any questions about this app before I move forward to how we went about designing it and translating it to Windows 8? Because really here the challenge is, what do you pick? The hub? What does it look like? And how do you get types and subtypes? The other option is flat. Would that work? You know, just have the navigation bar switch back and forth between a few options. So this is what we actually ended up suggesting. And hopefully I won't run out of time because I want to actually cover all of them. Okay. We decided the first time hub would look like this. You've got your featured drink because they have featured drinks. That's the first one, big massive picture. You want a featured drink, it's right there, first thing you see. My cabinet, if it's the first time you're entering, obviously you haven't made any selections. Then by categories, this would be a list similar to what you saw under when I listed hot drinks, cocktails, etc. Custom drinks, those are drinks you decided for yourself. I added a custom drink to this app, so that's where those would be listed. Favorites. Drinks I have come across and I have favorited. So far, so good. It's working. But we're still missing the types and subtypes. How do we specify that at this level? And so the idea was to have high-level liquors. It's cut off, sadly. And then also have subtypes. But at the hub level, we only start with the high-level liquor, such as cognac, brandy, beer. And then the next category would be a high-level mixer, right? Pop, juice. Well, juice, you'd still probably want to say pineapple juice and then the types of pineapple juice, because it is that kind of detailed app. So what happens next? If the user chose a section, which is sub-level 2, for classic drinks, this is what they would see. Here's you've got the different tiles for classic drinks, so you still have that list of suggested drinks, and you could at any time tap on something and get a recipe. But we want to give you that ability to specify ingredients and specify them at two levels. So you tap on the plus, which is to add, please include this ingredient in this recipe, right? This is the one, this is how you start doing the filter. Now, I haven't seen this anywhere. It's a little different. It's not what you would normally expect on a section, right? You've got this left panel that seems to be doing some activity, and you've got this right side that's still suggesting different tiles, and you could go to your detail page. What happens on screen number two? So if I actually said include, I get another section sort of view where I also have tabs at the top which do that liquor mixer garnish change, and I can actually select here. So let's say this was a top level drink, so a general drink, you could add brandy. And here you would return, once you've added brandy, you would return to your second level, and it's an ingredient that appears here. But this means, at this point, the drink list is filtered by anything that takes brandy, any kind of brandy. So how do I now add the fact that, actually, I'm kind of picky about my brandy. I want to make sure you're giving me a drink for a specific type of brandy. So what we've thought of is you tap on this tile again, this time because it actually has the fact that it has a general type, you can actually go into this modal sort of screen that appears and says, well, I have these different brands. Take your pick. And once I have made a selection, I can say OK, which will return me to the classic drinks. But the list is further filtered. This time, that symbol is saying include a specific kind of brandy. Does that make sense? I know it's a little bit complicated. It's a real life example of porting from a very list-based iOS app and having to reimagine it for Windows 8. What would make sense? And still be fast and fluid. Am I suggesting drinks to the user? Can they creatively find something? Yes, at each screen and level, they were always able to find a drink. Am I still giving them the ability to customize this to their liking? Yes, that's what I have added with the ability to set ingredients. And we added this extra, which is to avoid specific ingredients, which is a little functionality that I don't think you see on their iOS app, right? But it made sense for here. Well, if you can add ingredients, you can also make sure you avoid them. And so those drinks never get suggested to you. And then once you've actually made a selection, you just see the details of that drink, just very, very similar to the iOS app, but obviously optimized for something that looks and feels like Windows 8. And then not only that, we took it one step further, where we suggest similar drinks. Before I move on to the next case scenario, any questions on that one? Yeah?
Does it seem obvious to tap on the, like, to pick the brand by tapping the game?
Like, it's a tile. Would you tap a tile?
I don't know.
And it's and absolutely, don't think that I'm saying that I know the answer. Right? It's a good question. In practice, will a user immediately know that that's going to give them something? We're hoping yes. It's a design that makes sense. It's a tile. They know tiles usually tap and take you somewhere. But you're right. It's quite possible to some users this might not be intuitive at first. But we're trying to use something that's familiar, right? That whole idea of tiles, something familiar, something intuitive, so that they can immediately see something and be like, oh yeah, what does that do? Yes?
Now you said that you want to reimagine that other site.
Yes.
Mixology, I guess.
Yeah.
For Windows 8.
Correct.
Is that a source for a lot of, like, anyone who's out there to develop apps for Windows 8 are going to look at the successful apps in all other areas and say, I'll just redesign this? Then are you, you know, what is the ethics of that?
Yeah, yeah, I can.
And as well, where do you get your content from? You just
So for this context, like I said earlier, these are people that we actually did design for. So this is a real-world example where we were working with Mixologist. Their original app is called Mixologist and it's on iOS. And then they asked us to come in and help design their Windows 8 application for. And I think we're going by the name Mixology, and I think they're doing the development now. Hopefully it'll be up soon. So that should answer the legality questions.
On that particular thing.
Yes, on that particular one. But on the other one, yes, I will say people will be inspired by other apps that have been successful, like the Flashlight, there's 50 of them. Like the Fart app, there is also 50 of them all across the platforms, right? What is the legality of that? I think if someone can prove they have the patent for having created a specific kind of app first, they could take someone to court, absolutely. Why not? They have the legal right. Will they? I'm not sure. Some people will, some won't. Companies usually have trademarks to protect, so they will, absolutely. You could also approach them if you had a really amazing idea that, hey, I have this awesome idea, design. Would you be interested in working with me? That's another route, right? Because the legality is a concern. It's not that no one will sue you. It's quite possible that people can and will. Any other questions? Okay, so the next one was hub. Oh, sorry, my cabinet. How do you get to my cabinet? And how do you set your cabinet? Notice how I've actually introduced at this point a merger of two different navigation schemes, hub, section, detail. Oh, that looks a lot like flat. There's a top app bar. It lets you go to all. All utilizes the whole, you know, alphabetical ability to list something, search something, and I would think that it would also have the semantic zoom on it. And then the other option is stock cabinet. What happens when you tap on stock cabinet? You actually end up in something that you have seen a little bit earlier, right? Where you choose what is in my cabinet. First, at the level of a general drink, rum, brandy, vodka. I don't care what actual brand it belongs to or what specific type it is. And you can do that here for mixers and garnish. And on your first time around, you have to make the selection, hence why you're here. Otherwise, you might actually be looking at a list of the drinks suggested because it's very well aware what your cabinet looks like. So once I've selected a type of liquor, oops, did I go too far? I don't think so. One more. There we go. Okay. And notice how the selection appears. So I actually mean select, not tap, select. I have these options that appear on the app bar. I could say I'm done, and then I would return to drinks listed for my cabinet. I could actually say, no, I would like to refine this further. I would like to actually specify something at the subcategory level. And that's where same idea of pop-up appears. And you know, I'd like to put it out there. I've used this sort of modal pop-up appear several times. I don't like this OK button. Just saying. But that's what this exercise is about. You come up with a design. Does it work for your case scenario? Can you improve it? Can you make it better? And I've been thinking since last night, how can I make this better? Maybe I should have a dismiss by back button, and this should be its own screen, actually, because then the selection is made, and back usually means that you're just going back, but with the selections you've made. But a discussion is going on, whether it's in my head or I'm actually going to bring it to some designer at Macadamian and make a suggestion. So, but this is an interesting way of getting to your second level, and then you can actually select a subtype. Once you've done that, you've reached your refined selection. Tap, you can make multiple selections similar to how you did it in the other app, but it's not a list. It's not got arrows to give you more details. It's using tiles, it's using content. It's giving you that natural feel for Windows 8 that intuitively, yes, I can select it. Yes, I can tap it, that will take me somewhere. You return to your stock cabinet, and eventually your shelf looks like this, where you have sake and many types. There's a count. Notice there's a little count that's now appearing on the general for your stock cabinet. It's like little, well, I think the yellow here makes it very obvious on the first one right there, because it says you have one type of whiskey, or you have two types of rye, etc. Finally, the last screen is after you've selected, you've set your cabinet, you can actually return to your hub, and you'll notice that this is no longer a boring little tile that said that you could get to cabinet and actually start setting it up. It's already set up. So it's on the hub level, suggesting drinks that you can make from your cabinet right now. So it's a quick, creative way for them to just, yeah, I know I can make it, give me that drink. And then they've added this extra tile, which lets you still do that navigation, and not just from the navigation top app bar, to go to your stock cabinet and reset it up. Any questions on that scenario? Actually, I'll go back to the screen so you guys can ask me. Questions? Interesting reimagining? I don't know. It could work. It could be intuitive, but definitely different from the iOS app. Absolutely different. And also different from just starting with the hub and section and detail. It took it a step further. I couldn't make that assumption that this pattern is going to work for everything. So again, I think Thomas is going to hate me by the end of this because I keep saying that the biggest anti-pattern that you keep hitting yourself against is going with the pattern without thinking about it, right? It's a guideline. It's not hard set rules that every app has to look like this. For this app, this works better. And the whole time the user has quick access to getting a drink recipe, because what is this app good at? Giving you a drink recipe.
I like the personalization too.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to just go to this slide here. This is just a summary of the workflows we did. And the reason why I'm putting this here is because it's the workflow that told me that just following an existing pattern isn't going to work. That's what it told our designers, right? This is what the user could do. They would be at the hub, they would choose an ingredient or a category, and then they would refine their search. They would be at the hub, they might want to search all the drinks because they know its name. They were at the hub, they want to know some drink that's actually possible for them to make right now, so they go to their cabinet, they set up their cabinet, or it's already set up. And so they add items or remove items. Any more questions? Yes?
One question is, I don't know if this is part of it, how far in depth do you go with it as far as any cautions about alcohol use or anything like that? Does it have any place in this? Or
yep.
do you include that or responsible drinking or addictions or something like that? Or should that be kept out of it totally? Like, maybe that's not.
Well, I can answer some level of it, which is that when you submit an app with something like alcohol, you have to set the correct age and rating when you submit it to the App Store. This is true for iOS. This is true for Windows 8 as well. So this would definitely be an app that would have that marked as you know, rated for adults. And probably...
Yeah, the very start.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, when you for the Talks app earlier... You notice how I kept saying where your app is described when you go to download it? That rating would appear when you actually get to select it. I would hope that this would also probably include the same kind of, you know, how we had to do it for the internet, we had to do it for the hub, we had to do a privacy policy for the people who have this app, would probably add some kind of disclaimer of that sort on settings as well. I mean, there are ways to include that content, and that's why I wanted to answer your question. It wasn't part of the case scenarios, but yes, there's places to do that.
But it's not necessary. You know, if you're doing a mixology thing, you're kind of presuming that either they're, you know, the people are kind of aware of everything else, you know, or something.
It is necessary on the app that you set your rating correctly, App Store. That is necessary.
The other thing would be, and again, it may not be something you have to deal with, but how do you make money off? What ways do you charge, or do you not charge, and then have the advertiser with their bottle make it giving you?
I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. So the way they do this on iOS is they have two versions of this app. One of them is free, one of them is 99 cents. They make money by you getting that app, but on the free one, there's more advertising. I think you could probably utilize the advertising, well, following the guidelines in Windows 8, though, because the ads are embedded differently. You could have that. You could have two apps, one that just shows you ads because you wanted it free, and one that doesn't because you paid for it. I don't know any of their advertising in business, but I'm just wondering if you're showing specific brands, they better be giving you something.
product
placement, yeah. I don't know for sure, though, and I don't want to say that I do, but to me it makes sense that that could be another option, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Any other thing along that line? No? Okay, I think that's it, but I do have a summary. So recognize that following the pattern is an anti-pattern. I've said it. This is why Thomas hates me. but I said earlier on my first slide, it doesn't make sense for something to be an anti-pattern unless you have a solution, right? You have to have a solution. And in this case, the solutions that help, the solutions we reached were because of falling back on the principles. And we keep calling them first principles. I was thinking we should do prime directive, but then it would be one. So I had to stick with first principles. But that's fast and fluid. Content over Chrome. Use familiar and intuitive mechanisms, things that are built into Windows 8. Those charms, those features, those tiles, those app bars, they're there for a reason, and they will help make sense of how a workflow is going to work in a specific case scenario. Not just grab pattern number A, make this app fit it. You'll have to find out what your actual case scenarios are. What does your app do? What is it best at? And ensure that you come up with a pattern that could be inspired by the other ones, but it has to be something that works for your app. I think that's it. Do the evaluation. Another reminder, session evaluation. I think there's a link here somewhere. There you go.